What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Recording this on Wednesday, January 15th, and we have an absolutely packed episode for you. I was joined today by Nick Wallace from his podcast, Words with Wallace. Go ahead and check out his pod and his content when you have a chance. But we covered a lot today, starting in the East with the Celtics and their kind of recent semi-struggles. If they are still the favorite in the East with the Cavs having a historic start to their season, who is the biggest threat to the Celtics if it is them? And then some other of the top contenders like the Knicks and Bucks, we talked through them in the East. Then moving out West, we talked about all the non-OKC teams since they've created some separation. Who is the biggest threat to the Thunder this season? And which teams are in danger of missing the play-in altogether that had playoff aspirations this season? Then we'll wrap up with some trades. We'll talk through the Nick Richards to Phoenix deal, as well as I will put together some fake trades, and Nick will give me his initial reaction on that. I also do want to apologize for the quality of sound on the pod today. My microphone was having an issue, so it was through my AirPods, so not going to be quite as good as it typically is, but I got it fixed for next time. But with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. All right, so we've got Nick Wallace on the show today from his podcast, Words with Wallace. How's it going today, Nick?
It's great, Sean. Thanks for having me on. We were just catching up off air saying what we're doing is eerily similar, so I'm excited to break into a new audience here, and hopefully your audience likes what I'm doing if they like what you're doing, man. So I'm excited to collaborate.
Yeah, same, man. Super excited to have you on. I'm excited to collaborate as well, bud. Let's go ahead and get right into it. So I wanted to start off in the Eastern Conference. I know you are a Celtics guy, and coming into the year, they were pretty obviously the very overwhelming favorite. They had a super dominant year last year across the board. 64 wins in the regular season, only three losses throughout the entire playoffs. They had a top five net rating in the history of the NBA, top five margin of victory in the NBA. And they brought back the whole gang and now have an extra layer of experience and championship pedigree, if you will. But as of late, they have, I won't say struggled, but their last 13 games, they're only 7-6. I looked back last year, their worst 13 game stretch all of last year was 9-4. So they didn't really have any stretches like this last year. And among that streak, they have a loss to the Bulls, loss to the Magic with no Franz or Paolo, loss to the Sixers, who are 15-23. They lost to OKC, which no shame in that, but they did only score 27 points in the second half of that one. Lost to the Kings with no De'Aaron Fox. And then just earlier this week, they beat the Pelicans by only 1 point with no Ingram or Herb Jones. That is a Pelicans team that is 9-32. So I wanted to get your take on the team. Do you think that this is really more of a them being a little bored with the regular season, getting complacent? Because we've seen this out of championship teams in the past. Once you win it, it can be tough and grueling to get through the middling months of the regular season. So do you think that it's more of them kind of just coasting a bit, or do you think there are some larger concerns, and what might those be?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you. I feel very welcome after, really highlighting that. I'm, you couldn't have hit me up in like June of last year or anything like that. No, guess not. But no, man, I get it. Like we all feel it as Celtics fans for sure. I think there's a lot happening, and I wish I had like an answer for you that was clear and obvious, and I could just point to X, Y, and Z and be like, hey, this is why the team's struggling. But I think it's a culmination of a lot of factors. I think first and foremost, the reason you're obviously all over the NBA, so this caught your attention. I think more casual fans are picking up on the Celtics' quote-unquote struggles just because of the dominance of Cleveland and OKC. If you zoom out big picture, I want to just first off say that I'm not too panicked. I think it is a bit frustrating for sure, especially with the expectations around this team. But again, you zoom out, they're the second seed in the East. They have the third best record in the entire league. It's just a little frustrating when you see teams like Cleveland and OKC that are on a different level. Like, admittedly, they're just playing a better brand of basketball and certainly more consistently right now. But to go back to the Celtics, I think it's a lot of small cuts, right? It starts off with, it's a very similar vibe to the end of last season where it seems like every game, it's like you're missing one of the big five, we'll say. It's like maybe, you know, Jaylen Brown has to rest. Maybe, you know, Derek White's sick. Jrue Holiday had a shoulder issue. Kristaps, we're obviously always managing his injuries.
Yeah.
And then you look at the big picture and the big five guys, the starting lineup of Tatum, Brown, White, Holiday, and Porzingis. I think they've only played like less than 150 minutes together, something crazy like that. I don't know if you saw a similar stat, but that lack of cohesiveness is definitely a disadvantage. It's not a catch-all excuse, but I think when you combine that with the fact that a few guys are underperforming a little bit, that's how you end up with some pretty unforgiving losses. And then the final piece I'll say, yeah, obviously you're getting that target on your back, that drive from the other team, always getting the best effort out of your opponents because you are the defending champs. That's not an excuse. You know, we welcome that challenge as Celtics fans and as a team, I would hope, but that definitely plays into it as well. But curious to hear, based on everything I just told you, what you thought. And I know you, I'm sure, caught a few of those games. What do you agree with, disagree with there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I'm personally not worried about them at all. Like I said, I mean, we've seen this time and time again from teams that win a championship, and it can kind of go two ways where sometimes they jump out to a crazy start, like the Warriors back when they won in 2015, and they kind of catapulted into the 73-9 record that they had the following season. But I mean, you see towards the end of the Warriors dynasty, and they, those were some tough regular season games back when you get to like the 2018 era of the Warriors and stuff. So I'm not worried about them at all. I think that they still have every right to claim being favorites in the East. And I think a lot of their struggles also like are a little overstated, because I think it has a lot to do with just variability of shooting. Over that 13 game sample where they're 7-6, they still have a +8 net rating, which is like ridiculously good. So they've still had some big blowouts. They've lost some close games, and that's going to happen over the span of a season. But their three-point shooting is particularly down over this stretch. They're shooting only 34%, which is 25th in the NBA over, since this stretch has started. Derek White's down to 32% over that span. Jaylen Brown, 25%. Horford, 31%. Pritchard, who started red hot in the season, only 36% over that span. So, you know, a lot of guys just aren't hitting at the rate they had been. And on the season as a whole, I think that's sort of been the biggest difference, is they were ridiculous shooting threes last year. They're still getting up similar volume this year, but like guys like Jrue Holiday shot 43% from three last year, only 34% this year. Al Horford, 42% last year, 37 this year. So there's variability year to year with these guys shooting, and I think that's a little bit to be expected. But to your point, I'm not really concerned. I think that anyone who says the Celtics are the favorite in the East, or even the favorite overall, has a totally legitimate case, despite what we've seen out of Cleveland and Oklahoma City, because neither of these cores with OKC or the Cavs have even made the conference finals yet. So they still have some proving to do, whereas the Celtics, they've kind of been there, done that. I mean, two finals appearances, a championship, and what, five or six conference finals in the Brown Tatum era. So
yeah, 100%. And appreciate the statistics there, because that definitely matches the eye test of watching the games. And just another one to piggyback off that, like their three-point shooting has decreased every single month, like going October, November, December, January. It's just gone down, 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 down. So that matches. And I think a little bit of that, I kind of welcome that challenge too. I don't know if you've, I'm sure you've seen all the talk around the narrative about the NBA ratings and too many threes. And it's like, okay, like I would love to prove to everybody we're still a really good team, even when the outside shots aren't falling. Like, and I promise we're not the only team that's, you know, getting them up at a really high clip. But
of course,
to just give you a little bit more insight to what I've seen too. And I do want to jump on and defend my guy, Jason Tatum, a little bit here, just because it'd be totally valid to look at the Celtics, you know, quote unquote struggles here and think that, hey, maybe it's Tatum, right? Maybe it's a guy, we still see him involved in the MVP poll. He's never going to win that award, certainly not this season. But, you know, what's up with him? Like, why isn't he playing better? I just want to say, like, I really do think this is the best basketball that Jason Tatum has ever played. Like, yeah, sure, he's had some hiccups here and there, but like, the consistency, he's our best scorer, he's our best rebounder, he's our best playmaker. Like, that's gone to a whole new level. And he has just been so consistent despite all the struggles. Like, if I were to really pinpoint some of this, like Derek White, you mentioned it, start of the year, fantastic. He's been sick and he missed a couple games, and then it's like he just mentally hasn't been there all the way. Really have a lot of faith he's going to be back. I think the real killer has been Pritchard, to be totally honest with you, just because he was an inferno to start the year, and then you become accustomed to that awesome offense off the bench. It's like he's outscoring Holiday, he's outscoring Jaylen some nights. It's like he has not been that guy, and it's like you kind of get comfy to expect those big shots and that crowd to swing when he comes in the game, and that hasn't been the case. But I don't have a fix. I don't even have like a move I want to make at the deadline. Like, I just want these guys to keep playing together, and I do trust that come playoff time, we'll be in a much better rhythm than what we are in mid-January.
No, totally. And that's a great call out, because I do think this the iteration of this team is slightly different from last year. Pritchard, obviously, a much more expanded role, definitely in the running for sixth man of the year this year. But to your point, I mean, like, if you're Jrue Holiday, 34 years old, multiple championships, like, you're probably just trying to get through the season. And when Pritchard's playing the way he is, it's probably very easy for him to start to take a back seat. But we saw in the postseason, he was huge for them. I mean, like, he had one of his best postseason runs he's had. He had really struggled with Milwaukee in the postseason in the past. If you look at the stats, he was not efficient, but that's because he was asked to do so much. But in a more complimentary role last year, he thrived. And I think he's probably starting slash is more willing to take even more of a complimentary role. But if Pritchard's not going to be that guy, and for Pritchard, it really comes down to making shots. I mean, he's obviously not much of a playmaker. Of course, he is a point guard, like in theory, but not much of a defender either. Not that he's necessarily a liability, but if he's not going to make shots, then it's tough to fit him into 20 plus minutes a game on a stacked roster like this. So that's a big point. And then on Tatum, I mean, I agree. I think he's been great. And the thing is, the things people want out of him are to, like, there was so much conversation about his shot in the Olympics and in the postseason, and he did not shoot it well, like, justifiably so. And that's why he didn't play in the Olympics, because you got to make open shots on that team if you're going to play, and he just wasn't making any shots. So, but then it's the pendulum goes back and forth so much on him, because then it's like his shot's broken, and then the opening night he hits, what, like 7 threes. Everyone's like, it's back.
That's the best.
And then it's hilarious to see, like, okay, he's shooting 36% on 3 this year, which is like right on par with his career average. So I'm like, you can't get too high, can't get too low. And to your point, I think the biggest step he's made is as a playmaker by far. He has evolved so much there, especially when they don't really have a traditional point guard. I mean, Holiday has been that sort of at times, and White can do a little bit of that. Not exactly Brown's strong suit, but he's improved there too. But Tatum has taken bounds and leaps as a passer and playmaker. I think the idea of him maybe 3-4 years ago was kind of a ball stopper, a little bit more in the vein of what people say about Brown, but he's on a totally different stratosphere now from where he was in that capacity, a career high in assists this year. So I say all that to say, I think we're pretty aligned that the Celtics really don't have much to worry about. I think their main concern is just going to be being healthy come playoff time, and hoping that Pritchard can hit shots and Horford doesn't sort of start to decline. I feel like every year now we talk about he's going to fall off a cliff at some point, but he hasn't really. So we'll see there. But yeah. I did want to then follow up and sort of ask you, do you still think that they should be the favorites in the East? Or do you think that Cleveland and how dominant they've been have sort of justifiably taken over that spot? Or do you think a team like the Knicks or even the Bucks in a certain scenario could potentially knock the Celtics off?
Yeah, I think the East has made massive improvements from last season just overall. I think I still feel really confident in saying Boston should be the favorite. Just, again, the dominance that we saw from last postseason. If anything, in totality, like, you still think they might be a little bit better this year just because of, like, the massive role increase from Peyton Pritchard, like we were saying, and how much better he's been. You know, if we see a little bit more of that in the postseason. And you got to remember, they went 16-3 without Kristaps Porzingis for the vast majority of that run. So I'm still a big proponent in having that experience, having guys that have been in battles and, you know, playing deep into May and even June multiple years in a row. Like, I give that advantage to the Celtics. So I would still say they should be the favorite, but Cleveland has a real argument to be made. Even the Knicks have a real argument to be made. Like, Cleveland has vastly improved. The Knicks obviously vastly improved. So I think that there are some teams that are fighting for it and that are going to be more competitive than Boston. And I wouldn't say it's crazy to see them lose in the playoffs and not go all the way. But to say that I don't think Celtics are the favorite would be inaccurate. I think they should still are deserving of that spot coming up.
Yeah. Who do you view as the biggest threat then? Is it Cleveland or do you think New York or someone else?
Yeah, it's hard to say right now. Obviously, both times the Celtics played Cleveland this year, they were fantastic. The first game, they ended up beating the Cavs and stopping a pretty one of their many winning streaks early in the season, right? I can't remember how many games they had at that point.
I think they were 15-0 at the time. So
yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. It was their first loss to us. So, and then they played them again a couple weeks later in Cleveland, and the Celtics had like a ragtag group. They were missing, I want to say, Jalen and either one of White or Holiday. And like, we had a lot of Drew Peterson minutes in that mix. And like, Tatum was awesome, but Mitchell just like went crazy the final days in one. So anyways, great games with Cleveland. I would say they have to be the favorite to knock off the Celtics because they've always played the Celtics great over the past, like this current iteration of the Cavs with Donovan Mitchell as their most likely best player. Yeah. I think they have to be the favorite. I think we would still match up well with New York based on what I've seen. And I think that Milwaukee, I still don't take them for granted, but I think we've kind of owned that matchup for more or less the past couple of years. So yeah. I would say Cleveland is definitely the biggest threat to the Celtics right now.
Yeah. And it's funny because preseason, when I did my like picks, I did not have the Celtics going back to the finals. And that wasn't an indictment on them. Like if you'd asked me who has the best chance, I would have said Boston. But I just think it's so hard to make the finals back-to-back years. It, just in today's NBA, there's so much parity. I mean, we'll get to the West later, but it's so bunched up like, throughout a lot of the league. And there's so much talent that like last year we thought Denver was like a shoe-in to make the finals. And then they don't even make the conference finals. The field felt safer. But of course, like I said, Boston to me still is the favorite. In terms of, in my opinion, who's their biggest threat, I think Cleveland's probably the biggest threat to knock Boston off. I do agree with you. Look, Giannis is insane. He's having a ridiculous year. And I think in a 7-game series, they could knock off almost anybody just if it just plays out of his mind. But I do kind of agree with you. Boston is not one of those teams because Milwaukee they can't guard them at all. I mean, all their matchups this year, I think the Bucks had like a lead at some point in the third quarter and then Boston goes in a big run to finish just because the Bucks can't get any stops. And so unless they make some drastic changes, like adding some perimeter defenders, I don't really see them being able to knock off the Celtics. And I kind of agree with you that I think the Celtics match up pretty well with the Knicks. Just because the Knicks, in a way, are kind of like a copycat version of the Celtics. I mean, they've got a lot of interchangeable wing defenders. They've got a just freak at the five that can shoot from 40 feet almost and is super versatile and dynamic offensively. And then they've got a reliable all-NBA level go-to scorer with Brunson and Tatum, and then a pretty reliable number two. With Brown and then Towns, obviously. So, but I think Boston's the better version of that because I think one, they've got the experience, and then New York, they have a big flaw in my opinion with their rim protection. I think that's going to come back to bite them if they don't make an addition or something like that. Like Towns is just going to get put in the pick and roll play after play after play. But they're not gonna be able to take him out because then they're just not gonna have the offense. So it's a tough.
And he never takes anyone out. That's the other piece. We know what the bench is.
Yeah. Their depth is very overstated, I will say. I mean, I think Miles McBride gets a little overrated in my opinion. He's fine. Like he's an average level backup, but then after him, unless Mitchell Robinson comes back, which
that's a nice role. In theory they have a backup for him, right? Yeah. But even then it's so different. It's so
consider
different
me not confident that that's going to happen, but Cleveland's been ridiculous. I mean, they're 34-5 overall, started 15-0. They had another 12 game win streak along the way, and they're a plus 10.5 net rating, number one offensive rating, number 10 defensive rating. And they look like a totally different team with Kenny Atkinson. I mean, they have significantly more ball movement offensively, a lot more cutting, more player movement in general. They're doing a lot less pick and rolls, less isolations. Mitchell has the lowest usage rate since his rookie season, actually. And his stats are down across the board, but I'm sure he does not care at all because they are winning. And if you think about most of his career, even in Utah, I mean, like they were good teams, but like he did not have any help offensively. I mean, their next best player was Gobert, obviously, but he's not much on that end. And then it was like Bogdanovich, Royce O'Neal, Ingles, Conley, like a bunch of mixed bag role players. But I think the biggest difference with them is what Atkinson's been able to do with Garland and Mobley. Garland's like, I think he's like a 0.5% away from a 50-40-90 year this year, averaging back up to plus 20 plus points a game. And he looks like a superstar right now, which is at times.
That's the jump right there. It's Mobley and it's Garland, right? It's like those two guys, like the seasons that they are having in comparison to last year. And honestly, I don't even know what the stats say. I'm sure because like Darius Garland's always been a really valuable player and a fantastic outside shooter and just a really efficient scorer. And last year it was just like, what is, I would just watch
him.
Yeah,
he had a weird year.
Off. Like, and he had the injury and I think then he broke his face and it just seemed like he was just like standing and watching. And I think that when you watch Cleveland, like what Atkinson has done, and it's always difficult to evaluate coaching from our couches, right? Like it's
totally
tricky.
Totally.
But
yeah,
to me, we
always act so certain. We're like, that guy stinks. It's like, we have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Like if there's anything I never will claim to know, it's like really having an understanding of a coach, unless it's maybe the Celtics, right? But even then you get that wrong. But it's like the way that Atkinson has empowered Mobley and empowered Garland, and it's like that ball is always moving, man. And it's like
totally.
I think when you watch Cleveland recently and you watch the Celtics recently, and I promise hopefully this is the last time I do a Celtics callback, I think like that is kind of the struggle with the offense. Is like part of the reason the shots aren't falling, it just in general it doesn't seem like the ball's moving as much. It doesn't seem like we're as willing to make that extra pass. And I think some of that starts with Jaylen Brown. I think he's regressed a little bit in terms of just his habits and putting his head down like a little bit too much lately. And again, I love Jaylen, but that's just the honest truth, is that like Cleveland's playing like a very freeing form of basketball.
Yeah.
And it's all from, you know, Mitchell taking that slightly backseat and Garland and Mobley being more involved with the playmaking for sure.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, Garland and Mitchell are almost interchangeable this year, which is kind of ridiculous to say, because that like last year, I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, Mitchell has been putting up like career stats since he got to Cleveland, but yeah, Garland had a weird year. I mean, you'd have to assume it had mostly stuff to do with the mouth or jaw injury that he had, and maybe he just wasn't comfortable coming back. But
yeah, and you're already an undersized guard and now you're down weight and you're thinking about it in the back of your head like, I'm already gonna get clobbered when I go to the rim.
Yeah,
and now it's really gonna hurt my face too. Like, I'm sorry, like at some point he's a human. The vibes were apparently terrible in Cleveland all year. Like, we were getting reports even when Cleveland was like a middle of the pack team, like they were, you know, between the 6 and the 4 seed like all year, that Bickerstaff might have been out then. And it's like, I guess like they're not that bad. Like, are they really underperforming? And so you could tell it was just like a bad vibe season from Cleveland. And sometimes the coaching is all it takes to unlock a team that's so much better, making really minimal roster changes from the previous year.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say they were underperforming at all. I mean, I don't know if you recall, but like they had a ton of injuries. I mean, Mobley missed like a month plus. Garland missed like 2 months. Mitchell like didn't play the last 3-4 weeks of the season. Like, they had that 19-2 run or something through January, February. But other than that, they were pretty mediocre. But a lot of that had to do with injuries. So, but it is crazy to think like. When Bickerstaff got fired, I think Shams released that article about all the intertwines of the like stuff going on in the locker room. But there were reports that like if Mitchell re-signed, the Garland's representatives were going to like request a trade or something. So like this was like 6 months ago when this stuff was happening, maybe a little bit more than that. But they've turned it around like crazy. Yeah. And Mobley, I mean, he's more than doubled his volume from three. He's shooting above 40% from there. I still don't know if I really trust the shot, but it's still encouraging to see, obviously. What I will say, though, is while I think Cleveland probably is the biggest chance to knock off Boston, I'm not certain I would pick them over New York. I feel like that's an interesting matchup for them. I've still been a little skeptical of Cleveland come postseason time, just because the last 2 years has been pretty rough. Obviously, 2 years ago, they got just manhandled by New York in the first round, but they were favorites in that series. Like, they were supposed to win that. That was kind of pre-Brunson breakout. So Mitchell was like supposedly the best player in the series. They had more experience on that front. And then even last year, like, I know they win the first round series against Orlando, but like that Orlando team had no business making the second round. I mean, it was the first postseason appearance for like any player on that roster. And Paolo like was the only player that could do anything. And he was like 20 years old. So that would have been a really rough loss. I know that like they still, Bickerstaff still got fired regardless, but that I think we would have been looking at it even differently, because second round they play Boston, Mitchell gets hurt. There's all these baked in excuses, you know, but the point is we haven't really seen it out of them in the postseason. Yeah. And so I get a little nervous because like our team is going to leave Mobley wide open. And is he going to make those 3-pointers when they matter? Are Mitchell and Garland going to hold up defensively on the perimeter when they've got tougher matchups there? Like, can the two bigs lineup be successful in the postseason, which those are still questions I have, is all I'll say.
Totally. And I could see it's all very matchup based once you get into the postseason. Yeah. And again, as a Celtics fan, I'm pretty confident against the Knicks. But like you were saying, the Knicks are over anybody else. Like, that's a terrifying team. A Brunson Towns pick and roll on its own might be enough to knock out like 80% of the conference. Like, it really is that scary. But I couldn't agree with you more with that postseason experience. And that comes back to why I was pretty confident in saying the Celtics are still the favorite in the East, because I really do believe like you gotta have some runs. You gotta get punched in the face a few times. And maybe I'm biased as somebody that watched like that saga of Brown and Tatum coming up short for like way too long before it actualized last year. But I think that Cleveland, it's like they've been around though. Like Mitchell's been a part of some runs, right? And Cleveland, they have been in the playoffs. They haven't gone very far. But it is kind of far-fetched to see a team just kind of come out of nowhere and win the title. That's why I didn't believe in a team like OKC last year.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, it might be an argument against Cleveland. But it really, I'm not going to ever say that they're not contenders with how well they're
playing. No, totally. And to your point, I mean, I'd qualify them as a team that's kind of taking the playoff lumps. I mean, they made it the past 2 years. They get bounced in the first round 2 years ago. Like, take the next step, winning a series last year. So the natural progression would be conference finals is totally in play. Finals, we'll see. I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet, but I'm getting closer. I'll say that it's undeniable how ridiculous they've been, especially offensively. And just, their role guys have played super well too. Dean Wade has had a really good two-way season for them, as a 3-and-D guy. Struce is kind of just coming back. LeVert started the year ridiculous shooting the ball. I still think they could maybe add some pieces around the edges and the margins at the trade deadline, but they've got some assets to potentially do so. So we'll see. But
yeah, I think at most for Cleveland, like with their needs, like they have so many wings that they can change in and out. Like even Okoro, who was their starter like almost all last year when he was healthy, like he's barely played recently because he's coming back from his own injury. And And I know he got paid in the offseason. So for them, it's like, do you maybe pick up a more traditional backup big? Because they don't have one besides Mobley and Allen.
It is true, honestly. They just stagger those guys, which honestly, I think they can get away with. And staggering them isn't the worst, because I kind of think Mobley is still at his best when he's playing the five. But like it's one of those hard situations, because like Jared Allen, he's awesome. I mean, like he does everything right and like plays his role. Huge 70% every year, finishes lobs, protects the rim, is an underrated passer in the short role. And like it's in theory, you want to break them up. You're like, why would you want to trade Jared Allen? Yeah. He's really good.
So, I literally was just saying that on my last pod, like both things can be true. Like we might not be seeing the best version of Mobley, but it would also might be stupid for them to trade him away because he's just awesome. He's just awesome at basically everything besides an outside shot. Mm. And when you put those two guys together, like, is it the best match? But maybe not. But if how are you going to get fair value for Jared Allen in a trade? Like, it's just so unlikely, and they'd be foolish to change really anything right now. So I might be shocked if they did anything besides pick up like a buyout guy at the deadline, because what moves do you need to make when you have five losses in the middle of January? You
know? It's true. Yeah. And like, this is the best version of them we've seen. So it does come down to like, we've seen where their flaws and where their shortcomings are in the postseason in the past, but we haven't seen this version of Mobley, this version of Garland, this style of offense. So I think OKC kind of last year took the approach of like, all right, well, let's just get to the postseason. Let's see what our fatal flaw is, which ultimately ended up being the giddy spot. And they just didn't defend that at all. And they didn't really have a counter for it. And also the size and the rebounding, which they addressed both with Caruso, who admittedly has not shot the ball very well this year, but at least he's capable. And then Hartenstein has been huge for them, especially with Chet out. But Cleveland might be taking a similar approach where they're like, look, let's just get there. Let's play Boston at full strength. Cause I'm sure they're sitting there like, look, the Celtics we didn't have Mitchell. The series was 1-1. Like, I'm sure they could talk themselves into like, that would have been a 6-7 game series, which maybe it would have been, you know, who knows? Maybe they just want to get there and see like when they play Boston, where's the shortcoming? Is it the Mobley spot where he's not hitting shots and two bigs are getting exposed and Allen's pulled out of the paint because Towns or Porzingis are out on the 3-point line? Like we'll see. But I think this is easily the best version we've seen out of them, obviously. But I'm still maybe not quite there on them as like a legit championship contender. But they should absolutely be taken seriously. And I think Boston needs to not overlook them, especially after the path they had last year, which, again, I said this on my pod last year. Like,
here we go.
No. Let me. I had a whole segment of like, two things can be true. Like you said, the path was very easy, but I also don't really care. That's how it goes. Like it's a war of attrition in the playoffs, and every single champion you could like point to over the last 15 years had some sort of luck involved in it. And like, that's just 100%. How it goes. And of course you could say Celtic, they didn't have Porzingis. So like they had their own bad luck, but exactly. Part of the reason why I didn't pick them in the finals this year is because last year they avoided, I think, maybe the six best other players in the conference that weren't Celtics. They didn't play Embiid. They didn't play Brunson. They didn't play Butler. Mitchell got hurt mid-series. Halliburton got hurt mid-series. Like, they didn't play Maxey. Like, they avoided, like, best player they played was, what, maybe Garland or Mobley?
So. Yep. Exactly. And I do agree. Like, you know, you couldn't have asked for an easier road coming out of the East, but you know, I just felt like if you were really watching the Celtics at that time, you were like, is there anyone in their right mind picking the Celtics to lose before the finals anyways, right? Yeah. Like, I had to, like, if they had matched up against Denver, like, I would have been nervous. Like, I wasn't necessarily like, you know, we're absolutely winning this thing. But as far as coming out of the East, I was like, even if I like, I'm one of those fans, I wish Jimmy Butler played, like, please. Like, I would love to have just eliminated that and gotten that out of the way in round one. And then, you know, so on and so forth. But the reality is it's probably not going to be like that this year, you know? And I want to get your thoughts too on just like, you know, we have Cleveland emerging. We've covered the Celtics ad nauseum here, but like, you know, with the Knicks, with the Bucks, like how many of these teams in the East would you say are actual contenders? How many of these guys would you actually see in any world, any possibility of them winning a title this year? How many teams are there coming out of the East?
Like, maybe one. I don't know. I actually think the Celtics are maybe the only team that could actually win the whole thing. I don't think New York has a chance versus OKC, and I don't think Cleveland has a chance versus OKC. Maybe they would. I don't know. I think Cleveland won't beat Boston is kind of where I'm at. So let me rewind a sec and say, assuming health, I actually think Boston's the only team in the East that can win the championship. Maybe someone else could make the finals potentially. And obviously, I mean, if Tatum goes down with an ankle sprain in mid-series, then that totally changes the equation. But I don't know. I'm skeptical of all the other teams. I actually, bad take for me, my preseason finals pick was Thunder Bucks. I thought Milwaukee would have a bounce back here. But yeah, they just don't look like they can play enough defense to be able to win 3-4 straight rounds. And New York, I think they could get there, but not as currently constructed. Like, I just don't trust their interior defense. I think Mitchell Robinson, if you guaranteed me he played all four rounds, then I would maybe say the Knicks legitimately, but I just don't see it. I mean, he hasn't made it through a single postseason run his entire career, and the dude is an injury waiting to happen, even when he comes back, which, again, they said maybe January. I haven't heard a peep about when he's coming back, so I don't even know when that's happening. But even when he does, I mean, like, it's just ticking time bomb till he gets hurt again. So I don't think they can make a legitimate run with Towns as just the only legitimate center in their rotation. I mean, and they're playing the rookie Hakpori or something like that is his name. And then Precious Achiuwa, who's just like, I mean, what is he, 6'7"? I don't think he's a legitimate option come postseason time as a full-time.
Depends what night you see him. Some nights you're like, whoa, guy. In other matchups, you're like, what are, who is this again? Like, you're telling me this is their backup center? So
Totally. And like I said, I have my doubts with Cleveland. So I don't know. I think there's a world where if Boston gets unlucky, maybe they get an injury. Cleveland or New York do represent the East in the finals. But unless there's also an injury in the West, I'm pretty like set on the Thunder are probably going to make the finals. I just think I would take the Thunder over both of them. So I won't say there's no chance, but I think it's unlikely that anyone but Boston like wins the championship. But if we're talking make the finals, then I think there's a world where Cleveland, New York, or Boston make it, and like Milwaukee would have to get lucky. It would have to be like Cleveland knocks off Boston, and then Milwaukee avoids Boston, and then maybe they knock off Cleveland or something like that. But I don't know. It's a pretty long shot in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the conversation starts. I mean, we've said it. We've said the four teams over and over with the Cavs, Knicks, and Bucks. I think that's the most expansive list you could possibly put together. And that's no disrespect to Orlando, who's, I just feel bad with how much we've talked about the East, and they're just like above Milwaukee. But like,
I know
they're just so resilient. They're like a cockroach right now. They're just like getting.
It's true, honestly.
they're getting killed left and right with these injuries. And now you have Paulo back, who's been on like an all NBA level, but the reality, same thing we were saying, like they haven't got taken their real lumps.
Yeah.
Yet,
they're too young.
Yeah.
They'll get there. I will say, I think Orlando would give a hell of a series to any of these teams.
Yeah.
Like, if Franz and Paolo are healthy and they play the Knicks, like I'd probably pick Knicks in like seven. Like, I think that would be an annoying series for them.
Be a rock fight.
Yeah, I think they match up better versus like Boston and New York than Milwaukee does, for example. I think Milwaukee could give Cleveland some trouble maybe a little bit just because the experience part of it. And I know no one can really guard Giannis, but I also think they don't really have the perimeter defenders to bother Dame as much as the Knicks or Celtics do. But I think Orlando, I mean, if they're fully healthy, they defend like hell, obviously. And every time you kind of doubt them or think they're going to fall back or that they're not ready yet, they just keep rising to the occasion. So
yeah, 100%. So that, like, we respect Orlando. I couldn't agree more with everything you said. Yeah. But they're not there, right? And Indiana's had a nice little win streak themselves, but I hate Indiana. That's the most error. I can't believe I even just brought them up. I'm immediately mad at myself, so we'll move past that. But I think yeah like Milwaukee, I'm in a similar boat. I picked them to be the 2 seed in the East. I thought there was gonna be a bounce back, obviously behind Boston, but I thought they were going to have a bounce back season. And in some capacities, it's just been like a roller coaster, right? Like they started so like terrible, then they rip off the NBA Cup run, and then they've you know, definitely slowed down a bit ever since. But I agree. It just seems like those ancillary pieces around Giannis and Dame, and even if you want to assume that Dame is going to be, you know, one of the best versions we've seen of Dame Lillard, I don't know if it's going to be enough. And then New York, Cleveland. But I think I would just, the only thing I'd push back on you, on you, would be that the Cavs are real contenders. You know what I mean? I think that they have to be there just with having a guy in Mitchell that's been in some playoff runs. I know the team hasn't really taken their lumps yet. I think that the brand of basketball that they're playing right now, they have depth. They seem to really be bought in right now. I think that you have to put them there, and I wouldn't get too mad if you wanted to throw the Knicks or the Bucks in that list as well.
Totally. And that's totally fair. Anyone who puts Cleveland in that group, like, they've earned the right to at least be in the conversation. I'm not 100% certain that, like, they're not going to revert to Mitchell hero ball in the postseason when the back's against the wall. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't faced a ton of adversity this season, which sometimes you don't need to, like Boston last year, but sometimes it helps to have gone through some of those tough stretches. So we'll see. But cool. I'd love to shift back over to the West now. So the Thunder have obviously created a ton of separation, not only just eye test wise, but in the standings. The gap from the 1 seed to the 2 seed is 6.5 games right now. Conversely, the gap from the 2 seed to the 12 seed is 7.5. So Houston, who is the 2, they are basically as close to the 12 seed as the 1 seed, even though they are currently the 2 seed. So it is so bunched up. So I want to not really talk about the Thunder here just because we know how good they've been. Their net rating this year is even better than Boston's last year, which was the top 5 net rating of all time. So they're on pace to have a ridiculous season as well. They were on pace for close to 70 wins. So
yeah, you just saying this is making me pissed. I don't like OKC. I hate how good they are right now. I hate that Chet is just waiting in the wings to come back. And I hate that they're sitting on like a treasure trove of picks. Like I'm worried where this is headed, but we couldn't be more aligned. They're in sole possession of the top tier in the West. So the conversation is, who do you take seriously after that, for sure?
Yeah, totally. And so that's kind of what I want to get at is, like, who do you view as the biggest threat to OKC? If there were going to be a team that knocked them off, or a team that they're obviously going to have to play somebody in the conference finals. So I'd love to get your take. Do you trust more some of the younger teams like Memphis and Houston? Or do you lean on like the side of the veteran teams like Dallas and Denver, who both have admittedly looked very flawed at times this year? Obviously, Luka is still out since he went down. They're 3-8. And I mean, he's not really that close to returning. Nuggets had a little bit of a slow start. The Wolves haven't quite looked nearly to the level that they were last year. We've got inconsistent teams like the Lakers, Suns, Warriors, Kings, Clippers, or the Grizzlies and Rockets, who have been consistently really solid all season long, but obviously there will remain some question marks just because we haven't really seen it out of them in the postseason yet.
Yeah, I think it's valid. I love checking the Western Conference standings because there's just so much shuffling, and it's been like we could just play this tape from like the previous 3 years, if you get, you know, doing this podcast or whatever, it's like every year we get to like April and you're like, man, if Memphis wins, they're the one seed. And if they lose, they're the eight seed or whatever, like you're saying.
Yeah,
like, there's always such a pile up in this conference. But for me, there's two teams below OKC that stand alone, and it's Dallas and it's Denver. It's, you hit on it. It's those teams that have the experience, that's been through the wars. And they also happen to have two of the best three players on anybody's list, or four players in the world, in Jokic and Luka. And I think it's that simple. Some people don't really believe in Denver just because of, you know, they've just been knocked down a peg seemingly the past two off seasons with the moves. But next thing you know, like, Westbrook is really starting to gel with Jokic, and that looks like a real asset. And Denver's just one of those teams, like, if they make a move at the deadline, we're just going to be like, oh crap, like Denver, like, oh my God, like, what if they somehow find a way to get a Jimmy Butler? What if they find a way to rescue Bruce Brown back, right? Who's just like rotting away in Toronto right now. Like,
I don't think he played a game this year. I think he's been out like all year.
Yeah. So he just came back like the past 2 weeks, and he's getting minutes. Okay. And I think he's been pretty rough. But one game I was watching, I was like, he kind of had a moment where he's cooking and he's running the offense. And it's like,
great role player. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and we know how Jokic raises all tides. So I think Denver and Dallas, those are the teams. Denver, we've already talked about with Jokic. But for Dallas, you got to look at, like, obviously they're a shell of themselves right now with the injuries they're going through. But I look at Clay, I look at Najee Marshall, and I look at Quentin Grimes, and I'm like, those are all offseason additions that are hitting. And I think they, at their ceiling, is clearly higher this year than what it was last year when they went to the finals. So for me, it's those two teams, but interested to see if I'm missing anybody in your opinion.
No, I'm very much in alignment in that I'm very skeptical of Houston and Memphis, particularly Houston, because they, as we've mentioned, have not taken their playoff lumps, and they don't have a single player in their rotation outside of Fred VanVleet, who really has gone on any sort of extended playoff run, unless you want to count Jeff Green, but he's not getting much run these days. But look, I mean, I can't sit here and look you in the face seriously and say that I think a team with Alperen Şengün as their best player is going to knock off a team with Luka as their best player or Jokic as their best player. I love Şengün. I'm actually one of like the biggest Şengün fans, but there's levels to it, obviously. And like, they just don't have the star power, and they're a menace defensively. The stuff that Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, those guys have been doing this year is super impressive, and they've got a super bright future, and they've got a ton of assets to add that star player down the line if nobody on the current roster doesn't sort of turn into that. But also, and honestly, more than any of this, I'm probably one of the biggest Jalen Green haters out there. I can't seriously think that they can even win a series with him as the leader on the team in shot attempts. Like,
it comes back to that dunk contest like 3 years ago. He was a part of the monstrosity, the most embarrassing. Like, I'm still, this is a total tangent, a total sidebar. I'm so sorry. I am like a nerd who just like loves All-Star Weekend. And I remember like, I didn't really like Jalen Green's MO before that. And I just remember some of the, like, he couldn't even complete a dunk. I was like, this guy's going to be terrible for the rest of his career because he's making a mockery of the league in the dunk contest. But totally. I think we're aligned, man. Houston is like one of those teams where, like, I loved them before the season. I love Şengün. I got them all those dudes in fantasy. Like, I'm all about it. But it's like, now they have surpassed everybody's expectation, and now I have to be the bad guy where it's like, okay, but we're not really taking you seriously, right?
Yeah, we're not really doing this yet. Like,
yes, exactly.
It's a nice story. But no, totally. I mean, with Green, I'm just like, he doesn't look any bigger or stronger since he came in the league. I mean, he hasn't gotten any more efficient. He has these little 10-game spurts where people are like, oh, Jalen Green's breaking out. And I'm like,
hey, we're in one right now, though, so you got to watch it.
We're in one.
We're going to be nervously watching tonight now.
I know. Then there was that streak last year where he went on some 10-game whatever, and they were on that win streak, and Şengün went down. And then I urge people to look at the games that followed that streak, because he was awful after it. So I'm like, he just can't put any sort of consistent – play together offensively. He's inconsistent at best defensively. He hasn't progressed as a playmaker, and his number one skill is shot making, but like, he doesn't do it efficiently. I mean, he's a glorified Jordan Poole, like, essentially. And so I can't take them seriously with him as the number one option. And so I think ultimately their destiny to get to the next level will be trading him for an upgrade there with some of those picks. And I think, I mean, the extension they signed him to kind of lends itself to that. I mean, they didn't do some big 5-year. They did, I think it was 2 or 3 on like a slightly smaller dollar amount, more palatable for a team taking him on. So we'll see if that happens. Memphis, I'm also just skeptical of because I know that they have made the playoffs a few times. But same thing. I mean, I don't really trust their half court offense in like crunch time. I mean, Ja is spectacular still. I think people forgot how good he is when he's at his best, but we've seen his shortcomings a little bit in the postseason. I mean, he's obviously not a great outside shooter. They still don't really have reliable center rotation. We've seen Jaren Jackson Jr. cannot do that full time because he is maybe the worst rebounding 7-footer in the history of the NBA. And then Zach Edey, I mean, total, like, we have no idea what he would look like in the postseason. I mean, he's been in and out of the lineup this year with injuries, and he's looked good in spurts, but like not reliable. And then it's Brandon Clark after that. So I really worry about if they're in a matchup with like Jokic, who's guarding him. Is it Edey? But can you do that for 30 plus minutes in a game? I don't think so. And then Bane's having a really weird down year. I know they're really deep and they've got all these guys, but depth just doesn't win in the postseason. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have an 8-9 man rotation max. You don't see guys play. You don't see people playing 10 plus guys in the postseason, and they'll probably be more well equipped to overcome an injury if there is one with their depth. But that's really the only advantage that I see out of that come postseason time. So I think Memphis, could I see them in the conference finals if the bracket broke their way? Yes, I could, but I don't think they have any shot to beat OKC, and I think that they would be not my pick if they played Dallas or if they played Denver.
Yeah, 100%. Again, we're agreeing too much. It's making for bad content here, but
I know. Yeah.
It's just one of those things where like we couldn't be more aligned on Houston and Memphis. And I would go as far as to say like they are going to be the series that make the first round interesting because they're going to be on upset alert. Even if it's a team like the Lakers, where look, I'm not saying the Lakers are contenders, but if you don't think that they are tired of losing in the, you know, they've lost to Denver and they lost in the first round last year, like they can still reach that level if LeBron and AD are healthy and reach that extra gear that nobody on Memphis or Houston can compete with. So even if it's the Lakers, and right now the reality is like Dallas is down there and it doesn't seem like that's necessarily going to change. I obviously just mentioned them as a contender. Like, I'm sorry, they're running through Houston. They're running through Memphis. For Memphis to get to that next level, I think you kind of danced around it because, again, that organization, I have so much respect for them with the way that they are hitting on these picks and like, they have the rookie of the year, maybe, and it's not Zach Edey and Jalen Wells.
Yeah.
Like that's,
yeah.
And again, it's damning for the draft class as a whole, but that just shows like how this organization keeps pulling these players out of nowhere. But they need Ja Morant to ascend, and he hasn't necessarily done that yet. He's been pretty inefficient this year. He's still banged up. Like, I think for him, that's the killer. He just hasn't been on the court consistently. So how do you expect his play to be consistent? But until he is like the guy that Nike hopes he is, and we might all kind of thought he was going to be a couple years ago, that team has no real shot at even winning like a playoff series unless he's going to be like a top 10 player in the world. And he's not playing at that right now. He's just not.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that he's in the maybe 15 to 20 range and he needs to get into that 8 to 10 range for them to like make a conference finals, if you will. But I mean, yeah, back to your point. I mean, Jackson Jr. has also been a huge injury liability over his career as well. So I just have a lot of question marks with them. I do think that if they played like the Lakers, that they'd probably win. I know they lost the Lakers a couple of years ago, but that was a pretty depleted team. They didn't have Steven Adams and a couple other guys were out. And it was the whole Ja Morant situation was kind of hanging over them with the off the court stuff. But we'll see, obviously. I mean, I don't think they're like total frauds where I'm like going to pick against them in the first round, no matter who they play. But I just don't think that they're that much of a threat, I will say. But back to Dallas and Denver, I agree with you. I think those are the two teams. And then I actually still would throw Minnesota in there. I was the number one hater of this trade for them. I mean, I said immediately that I have no idea what they're doing. And there is clearly a money move. Like it just, they got worse. Towns is a significantly better player than Randall. He's a better fit for that team. And I didn't really think it made much sense for them, especially if they're trying to like convince Ant to stay long-term. But I say all that to say, they still defend like hell and Ant is still ridiculously good. He is in that top 10 range, in my opinion, to where Ja, we would like to see him get. And so I just think him offensively with that defense, they've made a conference final. So they've been there before to an extent. They've made the playoffs 3 straight years. They've taken their lumps. I think they're a finals contender? No, but I just mean that, like, I think that they're being overlooked a little bit just because I think that, and rightfully so. I mean, they've been super inconsistent, but I still kind of believe in them as a team that can make some noise. I think they're up to the 8 seed now. They were down in the play-in for a while, but I personally think they'll work their way up into the out of the play-in, but obviously time will tell there.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to have put Minnesota in this conversation. I was pretty high on them before the season as well. Just didn't love the trade at all, but thought that, hey, like, this is, again, we're going to see Ant continue to develop. Like, I think DiVincenzo is a nice piece for them that they've started to unlock a little bit recently. Like, he was playing so bad to start the year, and
it's been rough. I actually think he got just overrated in general, just because totally. I feel like playing in New York, you have a couple of good games and people are like, oh my God, this guy's
in real amazing. Moments in the playoffs too, like steals and game winners and like all totally. That, like he checked all the boxes, but it's like, the reality is we have a sample size of him in like all these different teams. Like the guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason he's been on like 16 to 7 years. Yeah,
exactly. So I just wonder if Tim Connelly, like, felt like he was just like hot at the casino, like after making like the Gobert trade, like it finally looks like it's paying off. Like, let's head back to the table and roll another one. And it's like, I don't know, man, like that's giving up Towns. And, you know, you might have like no marketable assets for that come like a year from now, if they don't re-sign Randall or they part ways. Like it's a mess for Minnesota. So I think, yeah, they can be frisky, but I'm definitely, they would have been in my contender tier before the season, and they've firmly fallen out for sure. So.
No, that's fair. Yeah, and I think Dallas and Denver are probably a step above them because, like, also, like, the whole formula to beat Denver that they put together with the Towns and Gobert thing, like, that's not really a thing anymore. Like, they don't have the Twin Towers. Like, they were able to put Towns on Jokic and let Gobert be more of, like, a roamer type. But I'm like, you're not going to put Randall or Naz Reid on Jokic full-time in a series, which, by the way, Naz Reid's been pretty disappointing as well. Not that he's been bad, but there was all this, like, I think he could be 80% of what Towns is preseason. And I'm like, have you seen what Towns is doing? He's not.
Yeah, that would be rounding up, like, a little bit. Yeah. Not
age. It's like 20% right now. But I think Dallas to me is probably the number two team. I know that they've struggled a little bit without Luka, but he's obviously going to come back at some point. And it's not like they've plummeted to the point where, like, they're the 11 seed or something like that. But, to your point, I think that the Derrick Jones Jr. loss still does hurt them a good bit defensively. You'll come to learn that I'm also one of the biggest Clay haters at this point. I think he's pretty washed. I know he can still be very dynamic when he's hitting his shots, but sporadic shot selection, very inconsistent, doesn't make them regularly. And I think he's a shell of what he used to be defensively. But to your point, I mean, like, it's an option they didn't have last year as a guy who can get
exactly out. Like, the concern with Dallas then comes to, okay, now you have more legitimate options you can turn to. Do we trust Jason Kidd to pull the right levers, especially in the playoff time, to know? Because if Clay's having a game, he needs to be out there. But it's almost more likely than not that, like, you know, Najee Marshall, PJ Washington, obviously Luka, Kyrie, and one of the bigs, that's probably the option that they want to pivot. Or maybe it's even Grimes, right? So I don't trust Jason Kidd. I think he got very fortunate to, again, I'm now evaluating coaching, like I said, I wasn't like 30 minutes ago, but I do think that he's one of those people that, you know, are we really sure he's going to know pull the right strings, or did he get pretty fortunate with having a really talented group of guys and a generational player? I don't know, but at least they have more options to pivot to where it's less likely he's going to mess it up. So I wouldn't count out Dallas by any means.
I think Kidd is the rare breed of coach that's actually a bad regular season coach, but a good postseason coach. It's often the other way around. Like, Doc Rivers, like, will get you to 50 wins, but then can't do anything but blow leads in the postseason.
Yep.
But I agree with you. I've kind of not been a big Kidd guy, which, again, hilarious that we say that at all, because we have no idea what's happening behind the curtains. But I mean, like, he's had Giannis and Luka on his team, like, his whole coaching career, basically. And, like, before last season, had done, like, nothing with it. I mean, like, the Bucks ascended the second he left with Bud. And Dallas, like, I know that the year before was, like, a plans transition tank, whatever. But I'm like, 38 wins with Luka Doncic on your roster is a crime as a coach. So, but I mean, it's hard to argue. He's conference finals in 2 out of 3 years with a finals appearance as well. So he's been better as an adjustment maker in the postseason to me than he has over the grind of a regular season. But to your point, I think it will come down to, is he willing to bench Clay in some of those games and play a Najee Marshall or a Quentin Grimes in his place? I think that will be a telling sign for them. But that's the thing is, like, I don't really trust Marshall as a point of attack defender in the same way that I trusted Jones. And Grimes, like, is maybe a little better defender, but he's more undersized. I mean, he's 6'4", 6'5".
Sure.
And obviously Jones has a ridiculous length and is an insane athlete. So I get a little worried about if their defense can get to the same level it was last year. Cause like they put the clamps on OKC in the playoffs last year. They put the clamps on Minnesota last year. Like, I don't know if they're quite built to do that as well this year, because then look, if you've got Clay out there, that's two older, like not super good defenders in Kyrie and Clay. And then Luka, who like can't, I guess can be capable, but we saw how bad he can look at his worst in the finals last year. And so you're putting a lot of pressure on PJ Washington, which the bigs are going to do what they do, but Washington really becomes your only semi-reliable perimeter defender. So, but all, with all that said, I think they have the best combination of star power plus like good, legitimate depth role players, bench guys. The infrastructure for their defense with Lively and Gafford is something a lot of other teams in the West just don't have. And so they have a high floor, in my opinion. And then when you've got Luka in a series, I mean, the guy is just, he can win series single-handedly, which as a Suns fan, I'm very well aware of.
Totally. Totally. And yeah, I still believe in Dallas. I think they showed way too much last year to not. And so I think that kind of sums up that playoff picture in the West. So I don't think that there's really any teams. I mean, if you want to talk yourself into like, hey, the Clippers were doing the annual thing where like they've been pretty good without Kawhi and now Kawhi's back. Yeah. But like, I'm sorry. No, it's like, I got to cross it off at this point. Yeah, it is. And they're frisky and they'll make a first round series out of whoever they get too. Like, don't
they get definitely will. No, yep. Totally. I think they're going to be annoying as hell to play. They will not win that series, but whoever plays them is going to be like, God damn it, I thought this was going to be super easy, and it's not.
Yep.
But
and it makes it tough for not to pivot too hard or take control of the car here, but I'm like, I think the Clippers, like, for them to be playing spoiler and, like, I see them maintaining that playoff spot, right? And you look at the teams like, you know, Phoenix, your team, and Golden State, and even the Kings that have surged as of late, and the ascendance of Wemby, like, some of those teams are not making the playoffs. Like, that's the reality of it. And it's like, which ones are those going to be? Like, way too early to tell, but it's that is something that's worth thinking about as well.
No, totally. That's a great segue. I was going to ask you, I mean, obviously we've got too many teams for not enough spots. So which teams do you see as maybe being in the most trouble of missing the postseason in the West among the top 12? I mean, obviously Utah, Portland, and New Orleans are pretty much out of it at this point.
Yeah, I still think that if we're at least talking about the play-in picture, I'm going to kind of stick with my preseason picks. I still think Golden State and Phoenix find a way. And just looking at the standings right now, Phoenix and Golden State are at the 11-12 respectively. And then you have San Antonio and Sacramento at the 9-10. I think Phoenix and Golden State jump Sacramento and San Antonio still. I think there's obviously a lot to like with the Kings recently, but I'm not entirely buying that a coaching switch is going to just completely remove all the headaches that have come with what is inevitably a talented but flawed roster. And then the Spurs, it's like, we all love Wemby. We love what he's ascending into, but I still think it's a feat for him to even make the play in a loaded Western Conference with the lack of talent around like him, Castle, Chris Paul. Like, there's not a lot to do in there.
No, I do agree with you that I think San Antonio is probably in the worst position to stick in there. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if like they are hovering around 500 and then come March, they're kind of like, okay, do we really want to make the plan? You know what I mean? Like, they're probably not going to make the playoffs regardless. So I could see them doing some like discreet tanking, you know what I mean?
Totally.
They start to like be like, well, we don't really need to win this thing. So I would lean towards them missing. I do think Phoenix, I'm not trying to come off as an optimistic fan. I do not think they're even remotely close to contenders right now. But if you just look at the rosters for these teams that we're talking about, I mean, they have by far the most talent. And so I think that they will at least make the plan. At least make the plan for all the investments in the team they have. But where I will disagree with you is I'm a little worried about the Warriors. I could see the Sacramento not making it as well. I think it's going to come down to those two teams in terms of who doesn't make the plan. But Golden State, I mean, since they were started 12-3, they're 7-17. And if you look at their schedule and that 12-3 start, it was a light schedule. I know they did beat Boston, but like they had a pretty cupcake schedule early on to get to that point. But Steph's numbers also are way down across the board. I mean, his volume's down. He's down to like 22 points a game or something like that, which is like the lowest since before he entered his prime. His efficiency is down a bit. His advanced stats have, like, I won't say fallen off a cliff, but they are not superstar type advanced stats. And so I don't know if he's declined, which I'm sure there's part of it is he's declined a little bit. I mean, he's always been an inconsistent star where he's susceptible to those 4-for-18 games, but he's so good at when he's on that it completely cancels that out and he remains an overall efficient player. But also, like, they have the worst number two option of any of the teams we're talking about. And it's not, it's not even close.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. And like,
I don't know if you saw the quote from Draymond, like within the past.
Yeah,
like,
I did see that.
Basically, for those that missed it, like, you know, he essentially said that bad teams are the ones that mortgage their future to win now. And basically suggesting that, you know, that group in Golden State is above that, right? Like, hey, we don't need to trade our draft picks. We don't need to trade our young players because, like, we're just going to win in perpetuity. And it's, like, just so ridiculous. And it was just perfect that, like, that same night that Draymond said that, they went on to lose to the Raptors. It's like, oh, bad teams, like the ones that lose to the Raptors, right? Like, come on now. Yeah, so literally. It's just one of those things where, like, if they had shown or expressed an urgency, like, maybe if they make themselves real players in the Jimmy Butler race, maybe if they were, like, at least making it known that they're going to try and get that second star or at least second option offensively next to Steph Curry and they were serious about that, then I would believe that. And look, that can still happen. But based on what just came out within, like, the past 48 hours here, I find it hard to believe that Golden State's going to make the move that their fans have been clamoring for the past few years.
No, I totally agree. And they've just been trying to ride this middle for so long. It's like they don't want to fully go all in for a Paul George or a Lauri Markkanen or whoever they were in talks to add. But at the same time, it's like they're not going to trade Steph, at least not anytime soon. But I'm maybe not one of the only people who does think they should do that, but I think they'd be well off trading Steph. Obviously, you'd have to get his sign off because, like, I'm sure I know it's tough. You want him to be a lifer, but I'm like, it's better for both of them. Obviously, it's like because they're not close right now and they've got assets, but like, there's not a player out there they could add where I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. I think they got a good shot against OKC. Like,
We're not going to know until they try, and they haven't tried. Like, I just think if you're going to go down the like, once it even crosses your mind, like, then we're like, let's just capitalize on Steph. And sure, if Steph was a different dude or whatever, like, if he wasn't so beloved in the city, like, it makes sense, right? Like, on paper, like, we have this asset. We are not contending. Let's move him to a place he can contend and recoup the benefits. Sure. But you just can't put a price on what that guy means to that city, to that franchise. And so that's just never going to happen. And so if you're going to go down that route, like, you have to become sharks. Like, get rid of Moses Moody. Get rid of Jonathan Kuminga. Trade everything. Like, it's going to be so depressing when Steph retires anyway. Like, what does it matter? Like, you're not going to be contenders. Wake up. You're not going to be contenders after he retires. So you might as well push the chips in the middle of the table because you're never getting another Steph Curry is how I look at it.
Yeah, and I get it. I'm just like, again, I think it's mutually beneficial. Like, I think Steph, like, I'm sure there's nothing he'd love more than to have one last chance to try to win another title. And look, I'm sure they could get, I mean, he's what, 36 now? So they're not going to get a ton back in return. But surely they could get 2 to 3 first round picks plus another younger impact guy. Yeah, I think at least, like, so if he's really, like, the franchise should do what's best for them and he can then contend. So I get it's unlikely, at least definitely not in season this year. Like, maybe we'll revisit in the offseason, and I would be surprised if it happened. But ultimately, I do think it would be better for both sides. But on the point of trades, obviously the trade deadline is coming up, approaching, only a couple weeks away at this point. And we did have a trade that went down today. My Phoenix Suns acquired Nick Richards and a second round pick for 3 second round picks, plus Josh Okogie. So I'd love to talk about that. And then maybe we can get into a couple potential trades that I've spun up and get your thoughts on. But what are your thoughts on that deal for Phoenix?
Yeah, man, I really like that move for the Suns. I think that's an obvious move where they're just preying on a bad team that is going nowhere fast and is willing to move on from an asset in Nick Richards that I think was really desirable. He was actually a guy that at the trade deadline last year, when I knew the Celtics were looking to acquire a backup big, I had pointed out Nick Richards. I was really hoping they'd get him. Obviously, things worked out. They acquired Xavier Tillman and still like having him in the rotation. But Richards has been solid for Charlotte for a while now, like really has. Always fills up the box score when he plays. He's a fantastic rebounder. And I don't need to tell you how abysmal the front court rotation for Phoenix has been. Like, they are searching for answers. And they're lucky they even hit on Oso, who I believe was a second round pick for you guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, the fact that
he's
even
in the 40s.
Like serviceable minutes. Like, that's already a win. So I don't want to put a ceiling on what that guy can be. I haven't watched him enough. But it's like, God, like the Nurkic thing, like that is going horribly. Like Mason Plumlee, we know what he is. Just to get somebody who I think immediately is an upgrade at center, and you swap some picks and you gave away a Koji, that's a win in my book. But I want to hear what you think.
Yeah, I mean, saying that the Suns have had probably the worst center rotation in the NBA this year is an understatement. I mean, it's been rough. It's been a rough watch. Nurkic, and I want to set. Keep this real. Like, he was pretty good last year. Like, Nurkic was decent last year. Like, he was, I think he was close to 4 assists. He was up there to 11 rebounds a game or something like that. Like, he was very solid and they ran a lot of offense through him. And look, he's never been a spectacular rim protector. He's never been a great floor spacer, but he was good enough last season. But this year, I don't know what happened because he's unwatchable. I mean, unplayable for them this season. He's got more turnovers than assists on the season. And this is a guy who's supposed to be like a passing playmaking big. He's just so sloppy with the ball. He is not rebounding at the same clip he was last year. His scoring is the lowest it's been since he was a backup for Jokic in Denver. And again, no versatility defensively, doesn't protect the rim. And so I'm like, if you don't space the floor, you're not a rim protector, and you're not versatile defensively, then you just can't play in the modern NBA, especially if you're going to be a turnover machine on the offensive end. He's actively hurting the team. So, but I mean, he's missed the last couple of games with illness, but he was a full DMP coach's decision the couple of games before, which like all power to Bud for like actually like having the balls to pull that off.
I would love to be critical of Bud, by the way, and saying like, hey, there's so much talent on the top end of this Suns roster, like they should be better at what they are, but like I don't have the answers for that. And he's clearly trying stuff. He's throwing stuff at the wall
right now. He's
mixing
it up. Hey, I mean, Beal getting benched too, like I was totally on board for that. I said preseason I thought that would probably be the best for the best version of this team. He would come off the bench, but I genuinely thought it would not happen for ego purposes, but hey, it happened. So, and they looked better since he did come off the bench.
Totally.
Because Ryan Dunn has been awesome. I mean, especially defensively, but his shot's been inconsistent, but it's good enough. It's respectable enough where it's not like teams aren't totally guarding him. But just back to the big man piece. I mean, Plumlee is what he is. You know, he's an okay, sometimes serviceable backup big, but he's not a starting caliber player. To your point, Oso has actually looked really nice in spurts this year, but he's got a really clear skill set. Like, he is a very good feel for the game, high IQ guy, good passer, good playmaker, good screener, good instinct. And he's athletic enough to be able to be a bit of a lob threat, but he's undersized and he's not a super strong dude. So like defensively, he gets exposed a little bit. So it's a offense defense type thing with him where like we played some of our best offensive basketball with him out there as a screener and a passer and a lob threat. But again, it's like when you play some of the bigger teams in the league, like he just can't hang with those. But it's funny because the Suns played last night in Atlanta. I actually went to the game and it was like they lost for one reason and one reason only. And it was that they could not rebound the basketball. I mean, last night they literally gave up 20 offensive rebounds. Onyeka Okongwu had a 20-20 game off the bench, which I don't know if I've ever seen that off the bench.
See, I think the only other one that's done that was, I think, Okongwu, like earlier, like in the, he had a couple crazy games, like earlier in the season, like in that vein. But go on. I mean, that's good for him for picking up the phone after they just get demolished on the boards. They knew who to call.
Like the Hawks had 14 more shot attempts. They had 14 more offensive rebounds. Like you just aren't going to win games that way. No. Booker at 35, Durant at 31. They both looked phenomenal offensively. And it just totally didn't matter because they just lost the numbers game because they couldn't rebound the ball. So Nick Richards, to your point, I think it's a great pickup. I think they are hoping it can kind of be their version of Daniel Gafford trade last year. He certainly is not as good as Gafford. He's a little older than Gafford was when they picked him up last year. But in the same vein, a guy on a terrible team that hasn't had the opportunity to play around like other high talented players like a Booker or a Durant. Obviously LaMelo is super talented, but the Hornets as a whole have just been a mess over the past few years and he hasn't really had the opportunity. So I think he could certainly thrive. I mean, his per 36 numbers this year are 15 points, 13 rebounds, 2 blocks. He's career 65% from the field. So like he's got a clear job, rim run, defend the paint, rebound. That's all they're going to ask out of him. They're all things that he's very capable of doing. And so I think overall it's a good pickup, but is it a needle mover for you at all in terms of like it actually making them significantly better?
Yeah, I would say it definitely moves the needle in how I feel about the Suns because it's going to come down to the margins in the Western Conference. Like we established, can that get them an extra 2, maybe 3 wins? Maybe. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the difference between the 4 seed and the 9 seed. So in that regard, yes. In regards to it, I can't sit here and tell you I think they're real contenders now because they got Nick Richards. Definitely not. But it's such a low risk trade. Like there's really no way that this blows up in Phoenix's face. I guess maybe if Charlotte cashes in on a second round pick and they get the next Jokic, that's probably the only way, right? Because it's just one of those things where like you gave away a Koji, who I like, by the way. Kind of, I met him.
I'm going to do a shout out. I'm going to miss Koji, actually. I liked him. And
hard guy to not like.
Totally. And like he is one of – I just like shat all over Phoenix on my last pod about how they don't have anyone who gives a shit and gets pissed off when like the other team goes on a run. He's like one of the only guys who did that.
Yes.
That dude plays hard as hell. And he is like, his hands are a magnet to the basketball, like always getting steals, always active defensively. And he's a pretty good finisher and his shot has never been great, but it's come around. It's respectable at times this year. So I will miss him. He was a necessary casualty, but yeah, I like Okogie.
He kind of got market corrected by Ryan Dunn a little bit and Royce O'Neal has been playing well. Like he was never going to be that fifth guy.
Totally.
So it's there's no risk. You know what I mean? And if I'm correct in reading the trade assets right, that came back, like you actually got a second round pick in this upcoming year's draft, I believe. I think it was from Denver. But it's like, I don't think you had a pick at all in next year's draft. So that's something.
Not this year, I don't believe. Yeah. So we'll see. I wonder if there was any strategy behind that. Cause like, obviously they want to, they now have 1 second round pick to their name and 1 first round pick to their name as assets. Of course they could do some additional swaps on some of their other firsts, which by the way, a couple of the firsts already have double swaps. So I don't know if you can, how valuable a triple swap is where it's like the best out of four, the worst out of 4 picks or whatever. But they're hurting on the draft capital. So, but at least they got one back. And it was for this year. So I don't know if that's for them to say, we want to try to add somebody again this year, or if they think that that's a more tradable pick, if they're trying to reroute that. But
I think for Phoenix, I really do like it. I just think that it makes sense. I think that it's again, there's no risk and something needs to be the fix, right? Like something needs to change. There's no obvious reason why they should be this far down the standings besides the rest of the West being loaded. Like Tyus Jones is still solid. Like you have Grayson Allen, I know he's not shooting the complete lights out like he did last year, but he's still a solid piece. Like they've worked around the fringes, whether it was in the offseason, whether it was through the draft, like in a way where they were so handicapped, like you kind of have to like what they're trying to do. All the moves since the Durant trade, I feel like they've maximized it. So this could be it. You really never know. Like it's not much, it's not hard to be better significantly than what Nurkic and Mason have been. So for that reason, I really do love it.
That's true. And I think honestly, the reason this trade is so good for them is not so much like about Nick Richards, but more of an indictment on how poor their center play has been. Like all he has to do is if he averages 8 points, 10 rebounds and a block and a half and shoots 70%, like I cannot tell you how much of an upgrade that is just from what they've gotten this far.
Totally. I have one last thought on the trade just because I need to get this off my chest. I just think it's such an indictment on teams like the Hornets that, like, I don't know if you've ever paid attention to what they've done the past couple years. They've had, like, nobody at center. Like, they had like so many injuries last year when Nick Richards missed a lot of time. Mark Williams missed like all of last season, basically. And he missed a lot of this season. And those are like the only centers they have. And Mark Williams is just getting back. He's looked a little bit better and whatnot. But it's like, you're going to give up your only backup big once you're like finally starting to look like a real team. And like, again, we like Okocie. Maybe he can be a culture guy, but you don't get any real asset. You don't get any real like younger player that's still ascending. Like, it's just one of those moves for Charlotte where like, I just don't even understand why they do it. And that's coming from somebody who kind of appreciates what Okocie brings. But I just think that's my last
ball. Yeah, I mean, they're clearly just hoarding picks. They want to just get as many as they can. But and Richards does have one more year on his deal. I mean, so this is another plus for Phoenix, is he's cheap. He means like $5 million a year, and they have him for next year. So that's just an icing on the cake for them that it's not like a rental or anything. But yeah, I mean, Charlotte, they've had some decent moves recently, but also some questionable ones, obviously. I do agree with you. I like Mark Williams a lot. I think he's a good player. I think he could be a Derek Lively type player in the right system if he can stay healthy. But yeah, I mean, health has been a major issue for him. And so I don't think they're planning too much for the right now, but we'll see. I mean, if they get a high draft pick this year and add somebody good, then it might be time for them to try to maybe start to expedite it. And they've been worse than I thought they were going to be this year. I thought they would be decent at least, but yeah.
Totally.
But cool. I want to finish off with a couple potential trades that I have put together. And I just want to bounce some ideas off.
Yeah. So please do. I've been trying to mess around with the trade machine, but I'm not going to lie. Like, it's like my trade machine software has not been updated with the new CBA. Like, I was like trying like a couple weeks ago to like send Jimmy Butler to Golden State, and it took me 25 minutes.
It's hard.
And I accomplished nothing, and I got frustrated and quit. So I haven't dusted it off yet. So I'm excited to hear what trades you have for me.
Most of these are pretty simple. And I think I've got three. I don't really know if any of them are going to happen. I think one of them is probably more likely than the other two. But the first one, I would love to see Zach LaVine in Orlando. I think he would be perfect next to Paolo and Franz. And they could do a Cole Anthony plus Jonathan Isaac. That works salary-wise. Maybe they want them to throw in like a Jet Howard or a Tristan Da Silva. I doubt they'd want to put in like Anthony Black or anything like that. But they've got a ton of picks too. So give them two firsts and those salary fillers, and it would work. Maybe it would only take one. I know LaVine's contract isn't great, but I feel like people talk too much about his contract because he's still a really good player. I mean, this season, he's shooting above 50% from the field. He's shooting above 40% from three. He's 80% from the line, and he's had a really nice bounce back here. I mean, he's close up to 24, 25 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Like, and I think what makes him such a good fit there is because Paolo is kind of a, I won't say ball dominant guy, but like at his best with the ball in his hands, not really an off ball player. Franz can do a little bit of both. He can have the ball, which we saw when Paolo was out, he was thriving in that role, but he can also play off ball a little bit more. And LaVine's a little bit the same, where he can do either. He can be a guy that goes and gets you a shot at the end of the shot clock, but he also can play off ball. We've seen him do it in the past with DeRozan and Lonzo and Vucevic in the past. And so he brings shooting, shot making, shot creation, difficult shot making that Orlando just doesn't have right now. They're 28th in offensive rating right now as a team, which is like, I know it's that number is kind of deflated because of the injuries they've had, but I think it's a risk worth taking. Orlando, like if they trade their 2025, 2026 picks, I'm like, trust me, they're not going to be in the lottery. Like they're going to be a good team over the next few years, and they're going to be even better if they add a guy like LaVine. So what are your thoughts on that?
I love that. I love that so much. I think it's just so, I've never been a Zach LaVine guy outside of like loving the highlights and just watching like how smooth he is going to the hoop, but he's been playing at another level recently, and I haven't seen a ton of people talk about it. I feel like he's legitimately increased his trade value this season because he's not only been durable playing in 35 of like whatever, they've probably played like 38 games or something like that, but he is like he's on a hot streak shooting the ball. That's probably going to come back down to earth, but he's been awesome. And I think that's exactly what Orlando needs, some sort of semblance in the backcourt that can be handle the ball at the end of games. Obviously him and Paolo will have to share that role, but like, man, like that's really scary. And then you get to unlock Jalen Suggs, who's been asked to do probably a little too much offensively recently.
Yeah.
I think that's like a no brainer. And so I would love that for Orlando. That's exactly what they need.
Yeah, and I know a lot of these young teams don't want to like expedite their ascension, but I'm like, it's a little different when you're not really having to give up many assets. I mean,
No.
the first round picks are like they are what they are, but like it's not like they're hurting for picks. They've got plenty, and they're going to be in the 20s probably over the next couple of years anyway. But then they're not really losing any key rotation pieces because I mean, Isaac's a health concern as is, but they. And this year they've got some injuries at the five spot, but like between Batadze and Mo Wagner, when he comes back next year, Wendell Carter, like they've got plenty of bigs. Like Isaac's a little bit expendable. And then Cole Anthony, I'm not the biggest Anthony guy. I mean, it's super inefficient, doesn't play much defense, but he's could be a good spark plug scorer off the bench. But
Totally.
if you're upgrading from him to LaVine, I think it's a fair trade-off. So,
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like they have plenty of guards too, you know what I mean? Like they have
yeah.
Gary Harris who's been buried, he's been injured, like Anthony Black, like and you mentioned a few players where it's still possible to make the deal work. Like if Chicago really wants to be sticklers and they need Anthony Black in that deal, like I don't think Orlando should say no to that either if that's really
Yeah,
what
I
came
think
down
they
to it.
would, but I agree that I don't think it should be a sticking point. I
Yep.
mean, maybe you don't give an extra pick or something like that if you're giving Black, but regardless, I would love to see that. And I think that they'd be like, assuming Paolo and Franz continue their linear ascension next year, I think them plus LaVine and Suggs and the rest of the core, and Mosley's been a great coach for them. I think they could make some real noise and be like the next Cleveland next year, potentially, if they did something like that. But
100%, 100%.
cool. Next one. I love this one's a little bit more simple. We talked about Cleveland and how I was still a little skeptical about their postseason prospects, but Cam Johnson to the Cavs, I think would just be a perfect fit. Their small forward position has kind of been just inconsistent at best over the past few years. I mean, they've just rotated guys in and out. I mean, they had Chetty Osman, who was like
Oh yeah, that's right.
okay defender, okay shooter. You've got LeVert, who's like not a very good defender, okay shooter, but a good like creator of sorts. Then you've got Strus, who's like good shooter, but like okay defender. Okoro, who's like in theory should be a good defender, but like is he really? And then he can't really shoot. So they've got all these guys. Dean Wade's been decent this year, but again, he's pretty limited offensively. So they have all these flawed players they've thrown in to that spot, and nobody's totally stuck. I mean, like Strus was the guy last year. Dean Wade appears to be the guy this year. But I don't really trust either of those guys to be like consistent offensively while also providing like high level defense. And look, Cam Johnson's not a lockdown defender, but he's got a lot more size than those guys. Like Strus is
Yes.
6'4", 6'5". Cam Johnson's 6'8", and he's a very good team defender. Like he's not gonna be a point of attack guy necessarily, but like he's not gonna make mistakes out there, and he can hold his own against most other wings. And so that just a little bit more consistency. Defensively, on top of just the elite shooting that he brings, he's been spectacular offensively this year for them. I think he would just fit seamlessly there.
So what would be, I might have missed this to be honest with you. Who would they have to give up in order to
Oh,
acquire?
yeah. I was looking at that. So there's a couple different ways they could do it. They actually only have one tradable first round pick, which would be in 2031. So they might be reluctant to move that. But considering they do have younger stars, maybe it's less of a concern than a team like Phoenix, who's like, also as their 2031 pick, but like Durant will be have been retired for multiple years at
Yeah.
that point. It's a little more risky. But they do have 8 second round picks. But then salary wise, it would have to be Okoro and Max Strus, or they could do Okoro, Niang, and then like their rookie this year, Jalen Tyson. So depends on what Brooklyn wants. But I do wonder if it's even enough. The rumor is that Brooklyn wants two firsts. It's a little steep for Cam Johnson, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But 2031 unprotected first, plus you get a guy like maybe Jalen Tyson, who was a, I think, late first round pick this past year. So kind of essentially two first round picks could maybe work.
So for me, that one I'm not as thrilled with, you know, from the perspective of Cleveland. You know, I definitely think Cam Johnson's a good player, but like the Nets are such a dumpster fire. It actually feels like bleach in the eyes, like trying to watch them right now. Like I know they're actively tanking, but like especially when Cam Johnson was out, like it was like legitimately five players like I've never heard of before this year, like at all, was like their entire lineup when they were missing like Ben Simmons, Cam Johnson, Claxton.
No,
Anyways,
totally.
it's dark for in Brooklyn right now, but it's just one of those things with how well Cleveland is gelling, like we talked about at the top of the pod. Like I just don't know if he's a needle mover, and if I really had to pinpoint a weakness with that fifth spot in Cleveland, it's like, hey, who is going to be that point of attack defender? And I feel like they have closer to those options, and like it's probably going to end up being Okoro if it really needed to. So I'd want to hold on to him, and based on what you told me, that's someone I assume Brooklyn would want in return. And so because like Cleveland has no problem offensively, like Max Strus has been like, I can't stand Max Strus because he always killed us when he was with the Heat and whatever. But like, man, like he's a guy that's been through those wars with Miami. Like I'm holding on to all those guys and I'm just trusting Kenny Atkinson to play the right one out of LeVert, Okoro, Max Strus, Dean Wade. Like one of those four guys should be the answer where I don't think it's worth affecting the chemistry and jeopardizing, ruining what you guys have going on right now. So I'd probably push back on the Cam Johnson one a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I just get a little worried when you've got like five guys for one spot because like on any given night, you don't know.
Then you have no guys.
Yeah, exactly. You can have too many guys for a position, in my opinion. So I'm like, you want to, it's so much better to like know who you've got at each spot. And I think if they had Johnson, they just plug him in. That's his spot for the foreseeable future. And of course, you got to eat into that depth a little bit. And to your point, I mean, like they would have very limited assets after that. I mean, they'd have to trade that first round pick almost assuredly.
Yeah.
So they'd have no tradable first round picks for the next 7 years. And they would have seconds to move, obviously, but like they're not moving any of their big four. And so outside of those players and having no picks, they don't have any options to upgrade moving forward. So they might want to maintain some of that flexibility a little bit and maybe hold on to those. So that's fair. But okay, last one I got here is I'd love to see Brandon Ingram on either Denver or Memphis. I think I would take both of them significantly more seriously. So on the Nugget side of things, him and Porter Jr. have almost identical salaries, but because Denver is a first apron team, they can't take back any more salary than they're sending out. So they would just have to attach a minimum salary. So any minimum salary plus Porter Jr. would work salary-wise. They've also got a 2031 first round pick to trade. I don't know if it would necessarily take that. It sounds like New Orleans kind of has been wanting to move off Ingram for a while. And I actually think Porter Jr. is probably a better fit in New Orleans with what they want to do just because they've got a lot of guys that need the ball. Zion, DeJounte Murray, CJ McCollum, Trey Murphy's having a spectacular season this year, taking a much bigger role as a ball handler and shot creator. And Porter's more of an off-ball guy. So it could just be a pretty mutually beneficial one-for-one trade. But I think Ingram brings much more of what Denver needs than Porter. Obviously, they lose shooting there. Porter's a better shooter overall. He's a more willing three-point shooter. Ingram kind of wants to operate in the mid-range a little bit more. Denver's not a great three-point shooting team as is. But I do think that like if Murray's not going to be the consistent number two that they need, which he, of course, I think he had 40 plus last night, but he hasn't been that, obviously.
Yeah, it is hard to say that tonight. He was so good last night.
I know. But Ingram, to me, is like that dude's going to get you 20 to 25 points every single night. And that's exactly what they need. When Jokic sits, they don't have to like totally tank their offense, basically. So I think it would be an upgrade. I don't think they're losing much defensively. I mean, I think Ingram and Porter are pretty comparable defenders. They still got Aaron Gordon who can take on the tougher assignment on the perimeter. But what are your thoughts there?
So I don't hate it. I think that it's thinking of him in Denver. I feel like that best version of the Nuggets, if there's like a spot where I'm trying to upgrade in Denver, it's probably still that Christian Brown spot. Like I feel pretty comfortable with Porter in his role. Like I think the confusing thing about Denver and the fact that they've been somewhat disappointing this year is like, obviously you're not, Jokic is on another level. You know, like Porter's been playing really well. Like really the only individual person that's struggling has been Jamal Murray. And that's been pretty well documented. Like everybody else is like, you're kind of happy with what you got. So I feel like you don't want to lose the plot, so to speak, of that 2023 championship team. And I just feel like that fit of Murray, Jokic, Porter, Gordon, I'm not touching that. Like I'm really not trying to move that unless it's clear cut. And Brandon Ingram is not enough of a needle mover to do that. Like, yes, create shot creation. He is leaps and bounds ahead of where Michael Porter Jr. is and probably will ever be. But in that case, I'm just kind of holding on to the hope that Jamal Murray kind of gets his mojo back and maybe bring another person in the building to put that spot. And then the only other side of the coin on that I wanted to add is I like to think the number one non-New Orleans based Trey Murphy stan over here. So I just am like, I'm not trying to bring back like another like wing in New Orleans. Like there's already so many.
Hey, he's a catch and shoot guy.
Yes.
I mean, it could work.
For now, Trey Murphy for now, but like just wait until they let him cook. So I don't know.
No,
I just
I'm saying
like,
Porter is a catch and shoot guy. Yes, so I think, yes, I think it would work.
True. So I think that's a good point. I think, and I like, again, I'm not in front of the trade machine. I don't know if it works. Like if I'm Denver, I'm looking at a guy like Herb Jones. Like that's the guy from New Orleans I'm trying to get, like maybe for a lower price tag. Maybe. I actually don't even know if his price is going to be lower.
I see. That's what it gets tough because I don't know if they have the assets for that because they could trade that first round pick, but I think New Orleans, it sounds like New Orleans is willing to move anybody except for Murphy and Herb Jones. So I would just be surprised if they moved Jones just because he's younger. He's on a super team friendly deal, but that's the point though. I don't disagree in theory about upgrading the Christian Brown spot, but they don't really have means to do it unless they trade Porter because the salaries like, They've got four guys that make a lot of money and then everybody else is like $5 million or less. So like, unless you're training for another guy that's making $5 million or less, it just doesn't work cap wise. So their options are basically trade Porter or just kind of like keep running it back. And I know that there's merit to running it back, but you know, I don't know. I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, I get it. And it's so difficult with like, these are like literally the firsthand effects of the new CBA and how difficult it is to move these guys. Yep. And so I think if I'm Denver, if those are the options and I'm in charge, I'm probably just sticking with and then just hoping that there might be like a buyout guy that's like a light at the end of the tunnel who makes gives you some minutes or some other option. But I think between Christian Brown, Strother, Peyton Watson, if you really need some defense, like they're going to have a means to still making a run either way.
Yeah. Okay. And then moving to the Grizzlies, so they could pull this off with Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, and Conchar. They also have two firsts in 2026 and 2030 each that year. And then they have every other first for every other year. So they've got a ton of picks. They probably would need to throw in a pick for that just because Kennard, Conchar, and Smart, not much of assets there. And I doubt New Orleans would even want Smart. So it may need to be some sort of three-teamer where Smart goes elsewhere. I'm sure there are teams that might be interested in him. I think he might be a good fit on like the Lakers. Maybe the Pistons want to add some veteran pieces with Ivy out or something like that. But what are your thoughts on Ingram in Memphis?
That one I like. You know, if you're in Memphis and you have the prop, like what we were talking about before, like once everybody's healthy in Memphis, they will be one of those teams with the problem of too many guys, and especially too many guys early in their career that feel entitled to those developmental minutes that are crucial. So I think if you can consolidate and do a 2-for-1, 3-for-1, et cetera, absolutely, especially if it gets you a guy where we were talking up Jalen Wells a little bit earlier. Like he's a great story, second round pick. That's one of the front runners for rookie of the year. Obviously, Brandon Ingram slides into that spot and is an immediate upgrade. So I'm all over that. If I'm New Orleans and I'm able to get some different guys in there, get some draft capital in return for Brandon Ingram and free up that wing rotation a little bit. And if I'm Memphis, I feel like that's one of those moves I can make to get another offensive weapon and feel a lot more confident about making the playoff run. So that one I like a lot more.
Yeah, totally. And again, we talked about Memphis. That's the kind of move where I'd feel a lot more comfortable with them potentially making a run and picking them against some of these other teams in the West if they had a Brandon Ingram, just because, again, Baines had kind of a weird down year. Jackson Jr. has actually been like quite good this season offensively, but he's just been so streaky throughout his career.
Yes.
And he's still not really much of a shot creator. He's more of an off-ball, like catch-and-shoot guy.
But I think I finally have come around after watching Jaren Jackson and just I have ugly bias when it comes to jump shots and just how things look. So it takes me a while to get over that. But I had like, I had like an epiphany that I'm like, it's ugly, but it works. Like the guy's been doing it for long enough where like I've finally come around on it. But you just have to accept that it always looks so damn awkward. But
yeah,
I agree. If you can get a guy like Brandon Ingram to put aside him and Bane and Morant, like I think that's a no-brainer for sure.
Totally. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Nick. It was a pleasure chatting with you and just talking ball. So I would love to have you on another time and would love to hop on yours sometime. But thanks again.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, dude. This was a blast. Thanks for having me. And if you don't mind me plugging at Words with Wallace for anybody out there that might be curious. Yeah, dude, it's just at Words with Wallace. Wallace is spelled W-A-L-A-S. So be sure to check me out on social media. I'm proud to say I have a very similar vibe to Sean. So if you guys like what Sean's putting out, definitely give me a follow and hit me up in the comments and we'll talk some hoop whenever, man.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones MBA Show. Once again, apologies for the sound quality issues on the pod today. But thank you again to Nick for hopping on. I had a blast talking hoops with him, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. Definitely check out his pod, Words with Wallace, when you get a chance. But we've got the All-Star break and the trade deadline coming up in the very near future. So we'll have all things related to those over the next few weeks as those things start to unfold between who makes the team and which trades start to happen as we approach the deadline. But with all that said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.